Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 5th of December, Anno Domini 2009, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use, a few things to choose, and that will come with a poll, which is based on this news story. Google. There's a shock. Google is expanding its grasp on the internet with a newly revealed DNS resolving service. Google Public DNS, announced Thursday on Google's blog, will offer you an alternative way to connect to websites. As with the launch of most Google services, people are starting to ask questions about what kind of data will be collected and how exactly will they be used. Or, in more lay terms, is Google going to be evil? Here are some straightforward answers straight from the source. First, let's start with a brief description of exactly what Google Public DNS is. In a nutshell, the DNS, or domain name system, is what actually finds and directs you to a website when you type in its URL. See, the internet doesn't understand words, so when you type in soundbites.org or jazz901.org, it doesn't understand that. So it has to translate that into a set of numbers. It does that by going to a domain name server and saying, okay, here's soundbites.org. Where is that really? And then the domain name server sends back the set of numbers that are the actual address of the server. So without domain name services, you wouldn't be able to do anything. Now, for most people, DNS lookups are handled automatically through an internet service provider. They're not tasks that most of us see or devote much thought to. You do have the option, however, of using your own third-party DNS resolver, and that's where Google Public DNS comes in. The advantage of using such a system is that it can be faster, more efficient, and more secure than the default ISP alternatives. Google Public DNS will not, however, offer the ability to filter content or customize the experience in the same way that a pay-to-play service does. Now let's tackle the all-important question of privacy. What exactly will Google be watching with its new Google Public DNS service? Here's the breakdown of what is and isn't collected. What is collected? Your IP address, your location, the website you look up, and lots of technical details. But Google says those data are not stored with any data that would identify who you are. What's not stored? Your name or any other personally identifying information. None of the information collected, Google says, is ever tied to your Google account, stored as part of your profile, or any other Google service, or shared with any third-party provider. And that makes a lot of sense, honestly, because all it's doing is taking a web address and turning it into a numeric address and sending that back to whatever computer it came from. It may not be you that's on it. It may be that you're out in a cafe somewhere, and so you have a different address or whatever. So any of that stuff can happen. Now, the last concern, what about ads? Is Google going to be inserting sponsorships? So far, there's no indication that it will, or in this case, can, really. However, you have to remember that Google is the largest advertising and redirection company on the internet. So here's our question of the week. If you go to soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, you will find our poll of the week. And this week's question is, do you trust Google with your DNS data? And the choices are absolutely, I trust Google implicitly, I have never trusted Google, and I'm too lazy to have an opinion on my safety on the internet. So far, we have about 38 polls, and 68% of you have never trusted Google. 26% of you are too lazy to have an opinion, and in fact, only two people trust Google implicitly. So once you're done with that, of course, I know that particularly when it comes to privacy on the internet, all of the anarchists who make up our audience have a lot more to say than just to click a button. So if you look at the little yellow box underneath the poll, you will see a link that says give us your opinion. If you click on that, it will take you to my website, asknick.com.
That's ask.
You jumped the gun again.
And Rob taught you last week how to do this. Let's try it again. It will take you to my website, asknick.com.
That's asknick.com.
Well done.
Well, I thought you wanted it.
Oh, both times?
Yeah.
Whatever. Where you can enter your opinion. Ben, join us.
Now that I know that you want it after the deep voice.
Yeah, right. Join us in, back at soundbites.org, and you can join us in the forums and all that stuff. And while you're there, take a look at what I offer at AskNick.com. After all, I have all kinds of Q&As. If you're a member, you can search through all the stuff I've put up there. That alone is worth $15 a year, I think. But at any rate, don't do any of that until after the show, because right now we want you to give us a call. Tell us what you think of Google offering yet another service to end up owning the internet. And please call us with any computer questions you have or any other kind of questions you might have. We'll take a crack at anything, as we proved last night in Second Life. Our phone number, that's exactly right. Our phone number is 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Of course, if you're outside the 585 area code, call us toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And we will be happy at that point to take your calls.
There was an interesting story or show this week on CNBC, I think it was, about Google and what's going on behind the scenes at Google. And one of the things that they said that really struck me is that people type the most personal things into Google.
Yeah.
Because it feels anonymous on the internet. If you go to Google's main page and start typing your search query in, it pops up a list of recent and previous searches that other people have typed in. And it's a nice tip, so you can probably find what you're searching for a lot faster. But you just look at some of the options there. I typed in how to and how to tie a tie, how to kiss, how to get pregnant.
Very nice.
Among the top hits. How to hire. The top hit is how to hire a hitman. Followed by nanny, contractor, employees, prostitute.
Nice. Did you know?
You can type in anything, and these are queries other people have already searched for.
Well, two things that I have to tell you say about that. There is a site, Google.com, and you get four independent Google browser windows. So you can actually type in four entirely different searches. I have not gone past three levels, but in each of those, you could also type Google.com. The other place, the coolest place, is mysterygoogle.com. If you type in a query and hit enter, you get the answer from the person's query before you. So,
are you instead of are you feeling lucky, the button is are you sure?
You're feeling lucky, sucker.
So it's actually pretty cool. You know what? You get what the person before you was actually searching for. So if you, I don't know, maybe search for sound bites, you
that
get some whatever weird thing.
Though,
yeah, exactly.
Folks.
Exactly. Whoa. So it's pretty neat. Pretty cool, fun thing. We talked in a minute or two about Second Life a minute ago. And for those of you who don't know, Second Life is an online service where you get to build an avatar and run your Second Life. You can. It's not like those pet things where you have to go in all the time and mm-hmm. have to be there, and if you don't, something dies or whatever. This is just a place to go and have fun. And we are there every Friday night from 9 to, say, 10:30 Eastern time. Those of you who are listening outside, you know, listening on the podcast or on the live stream at jazz901.org, who are outside the Eastern time zone, you have to do your own math on that one.
Our friend Lukey, who listens to it, takes it into work.
Yeah,
and listens to it at work so the other folks can enjoy it there, too.
That's very nice, yeah. Lukey. It's nice of you to do that. Hi, everybody at Lukey's work. Hi. Hi. I can't hear you. All right. So we're in there every Friday night, and a lot of people are there. Last night, we talked about everything, and I mean everything. Computers for a while. I talked about my new car. I bought a new car this week. I bought a Nissan Cube.
That is cool.
It is a nice car.
I'm waiting for the dodecahedron.
Yes, I expect you are.
Beware the power of the dodecahedron.
Well, it's better than those toasters. Have you seen that toaster car? They call it the toaster?
Yeah.
And that's what it looks like. It should have a big handle on the back.
Right. So you can pop down.
Pop down, and then on top it should have two slits.
Is that how you get out of the car? The button goes spring and you go fly out the top?
Yeah. Two slots.
Projection seats
are
standard, yeah. But this is a great car. I bought it Wednesday. I'm very, very pleased with it. It's, it drives like a dream. Well, of course, now the car I got rid of was 11 years old. So you got to take everything I say with a grain of salt. But, it drives great and it's huge on the inside. My daughter has christened it the TARDIS because it is, in fact, bigger on the inside than on the outside. Outside, it looks like a tiny little car and you sit in it and you can't reach the other side.
Well, that's
I used to own a Volkswagen Bug.
Yeah.
And I could scrape the back window from sitting in the driver's seat.
Oh, yeah. No problem.
But this car is huge on the inside.
Like I told you, it's like the old cartoons for some of the folks that remember some of the old cartoons.
Yeah.
Is when there was one with Popeye.
Yep.
And he'd look at this tent because he put his head in the tent and it was this huge palace. And then they show his head come out and he goes completely circling around the tent looking at his body and it's like, huh?
Yep.
That's the way this car looks. I mean, it's huge inside.
It's huge on the inside. Yeah. I'm very pleased with it. It's an interesting car. I'm very happy. And we talked a lot about that last night for whatever reason. I'm not entirely certain. It's not really a Cylon car. It doesn't make the right noise, but I'm over in the IRC chat as well. IRC is an online thing. It's the Internet Relay Chat. It's the Internet chat sites, and you can get there from our website as well. And, yeah. Somebody said, I thought this was sound bites, not car talk. We're not talking about how to fix it, because I don't know how to fix it. But I do have... I do love the car. My daughter has named it the TARDIS because it is bigger on the inside than on the outside, and I'm pretty pleased. It's not a Cylon car, but it is a TARDIS. And the doctor wants to remind us that Dave is giving away 3 free avatars at Dreams where he's involved in a contest.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes, we're literally having a contest there where folks have back – they've taken it back to like the folks here in Rochester remember the old – well, I'm sure folks in all towns – remember the days when you used to go downtown and they'd fix up the store windows?
Mm-hmm.
And there were all these fancy Christmas displays, and you know, you'd see the train in the windows or, you know, various Christmas displays. Like, I'll tell this other story, too, about my mother, God rest her soul. But, you know, these various displays where folks would, you know... put it up, and they're doing this in Dreams.
Before we get into that, you know, you can save us from Dave's stories by giving us a call at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415.
The one thing I just noticed, which we should probably do for the next 3 weeks, just as a suggestion.
Sure.
Is start talking about the different things that we want for Christmas, because, you know, it's literally, you know, what, 21 days away.
And that's an interesting idea. If you are listening with your significant other, you can give us a call and tell us what you want for Christmas, and perhaps Santa will be listening.
Very well could be.
Absolutely.
I'll tell you one thing. Just off the top of my list, I put up for one client. Granted, I've got 2 22-inch monitors, but we put up a 24, and I saw a 30.
Yeah. Oh! Uh-huh.
I saw a really sweet 43-inch on the internet that's curved, so it wraps around you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they had a demo with 3 of them hooked together. So
wrap around?
It was about 190, 200 degree
wrap
around.
Can you think about the driver for that to keep the image?
Well, it's only 2550 by 900 resolution.
No, to keep the image from going anamorphic on you as it wraps around, you know?
I bet that's handled in the monitor itself and not by the video card.
It would have to be, because doing it in software is just going to be too slow no matter what else you do. Yeah. But I'll tell you, it's time now to give us a call, 966-JAZZ, 966-5299, or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415, and tell us what you want for Christmas. And hopefully, your particular Santa will be listening.
Mm-hmm. Can always hope. But, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of great – that's the other thing we should mention. Well, the folks are getting ready to get their computer.
I want cube toys. What was the one that you told me about in case my Santa's listening?
Anything?
The tray, the floor tray.
Oh, yeah, the various trays that you can get to catch water in it. I'll send you the
Send me the link, yeah.
Yeah. Because the weather, you know, getting in and out of the car and that, you know, the slush and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Gets out. These are literally custom molded trays that sit in my vehicle. That way I don't have all the carpet getting messed up and everything else. One thing, though, I do want to go off on, and this is not even my rant, is just some of these ads right now. I mean, you folks are going to, even starting this Sunday, it started with the, you know, Thanksgiving weekend there, all these great displays and everything else. Folks are, you know, seeing all these great deals. And they're, and I'm sure they're going to start doing it to Steve, too, if they haven't already, coming in and say, can you match this price? Save you the trip. No, don't even bother.
Most of the time, it's we won't sell anything that crappy. And that's why we won't match $299 for a laptop. Yeah.
Oh, I got an answer for my Santa. She just texted me. Santa says chances are slim.
Santa has an 8-ball? The magic 8-ball, Santa.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
yeah, so there's always cool toys. Anything from Think Geek or Extreme Geek?
Yes, exactly. Much. Anything at all from any of those places, absolutely. There's a lot of good stuff there that's out there. But we're going to go to the phones right now, and our first caller this week is Todd. Where are you calling from, Todd?
I'm calling from Gates. How are you guys today?
Peachy, how are you?
I'm doing great. This is my question.
Yes.
I just bought a new phone, a Verizon phone, and it's a big MP3 player. It's like 10 gig or something like that. And I neglected to notice that it said it doesn't support the Mac. I'm on a Mac. Is there any way that I can link it and make it work?
It depends on what model phone it is, but most likely, yes. There are several programs that will let you sync theoretically unsupported phones. There's the Missing Sync from a company called Markspace. Is it a BlackBerry OS, or is it Windows Mobile OS, or is it Palm OS?
I don't have a clue.
Yeah. Or is it Android?
Or is it Android OS? Yeah, so a lot depends on what OS it is. But if you Google the model of the phone and with a Mac, you know, so LG VX5900 with a Mac, you'll probably find ways to do it. A lot of times you can just, if the phone has Bluetooth, you can set up Bluetooth file sharing.
And oh, I never even thought of that.
Copy files through Bluetooth. Some phones you can sync through Bluetooth wirelessly. Some phones you must have a USB cable between them. And that all, again, depends on exactly the model of phone it is.
Also check out bitpim.org, B-I-T-P-I-M. Now that I say that, I don't know that it runs on a Mac. Well, you'll find out. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back.
Awesome. Thank you, gentlemen.
Sure. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick, could that be louder? Me, Nick Francesco, and you on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Soundbites, celebrating 20 years.
The Jazz 90.1 member card is more than just a card. It's our way of thanking you for supporting Jazz 90.1. Because in return, you can save money all year long by showing your Jazz 90.1 member card for discounts at local Jazz 90.1 member card businesses, including 45 East Fine Jewelers, Adams Basin Inn, Antonetta's Italian Restaurant, The Bop Shop, Bert Shapiro Photography, Hedonist Artisan Chocolates, Leaf and Bean Coffee Company, Lorraine's Food Factory, Mary Boyce of Mario's Hair Studio, Mind and Body Connection, New Health Cafe, Small World Bakery, Sound Source, Tuxedo Corner, Irondequoit and Gates locations, Enright PC Management, and Holland Music Studios. Carry your Jazz 90.1 member card and show it when you shop. For a complete and up-to-date list of member card businesses, visit our website at www.jazz901.org. To get your member card, call 966-5299. That's 966-JAZZ, and become a member of Jazz 90.1.
Ladies and gentlemen, y'all ready for the blues?
If you're ready for some blues, look no further than Sunday nights. I'm Greg Lefebvre, your host for Doc's Juke Joint. every Sunday from 7 till 10, part of our 5 hours of blues on Sunday nights. On the Juke Joint, you'll hear new blues, classic blues, and our extensive music calendar. Dig the blues on Sunday nights on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hi, this is Chuck Ingersoll. Join me for the Soul Jazz Spectrum, Friday nights at midnight on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. All you Windows people, brace yourselves. It's time for Microsoft's monthly visitor. According to the Microsoft Research, the Microsoft Security Response Center, Microsoft will be issuing 6 security bulletins on Tuesday, and it will host a webcast to address customer questions about the bulletins the following day, which will be December 9th at 2. It says here 2 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. That must be 2 p.m.
No. What is that, GMT? Or Pacific Time? Microsoft's Pacific Time, right?
11 p.m., the day before.
Yeah.
That's probably not right. 3 of the vulnerabilities are rated critical, and the other 3 are marked important. All of the critical vulnerabilities earn their ratings through a remote code execution impact, meaning a hacker could potentially gain control of an infected machine. At least 5 of the 6 patches will require a restart. A list of affected operating system includes Windows 2000, XP, Windows Server 2003, Windows Vista, Windows Server 2008, both x86 and 64 for all those. Windows 7 is excluded from the list, but one of the updates applies to Windows Server 2008 Release 2. In terms of the Microsoft Office suites, only Office XP and Office 2003 are affected. In addition, Project 2000 and 2002 and 2003, Microsoft Works 8.5, and Microsoft Office Converter Pack are also vulnerable. What I'm saying here is download the update and install it. If you're wondering, the Internet Explorer hole Microsoft is plugging is indeed the one reported on last month that affects both Internet Explorer 6 and Internet Explorer 7, but not Internet Explorer 8. And why are you still using Internet Explorer anyway? Along with those patches, Microsoft is also planning to release some additional things on Patch Tuesday, including one or more non-security high-priority updates on Windows Update, Windows Server Update Services, Microsoft Update, and WSUS. This information, of course, is subject to change. Microsoft has been known to rush patches as well as pull them if it deems it necessary. So my question to you is, will you indeed be patching immediately? Give us a call, 966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or outside the 585 area code, 1-800-790-0415, just like Bodan did. Where are you calling from, Bodan?
The city of Rochester, New York.
The glorious city, hub of civilization in the Western world. What can we do for you?
Gentlemen, I've heard you talk about add-ons and browser extensions, especially since Firefox is now my default browser. This morning, since I used the program Skype to call my friends in Europe, Skype notified me that there was an update available, and I downloaded it. In addition to the update to the program, all of a sudden, something popped up that said it was the browser highlighter. And when I did a little research on it, it's an extension. It's an add-on and stuff like that. But for some reason, this browser add-on comes from eBay. So is there any advantage for me to use it? Should I uninstall it? What's your take on these add-ons? And, you know, for Firefox, they're called add-ons. Is there any advantage, or is it strictly an advantage for eBay?
It's strictly an advantage for eBay. The browser highlighter from eBay is designed to compare pricing. It will also help you make Skype calls. What it does is you can highlight different products in Firefox or Internet Explorer and compare the pricing of those products with the prices that are on eBay. The tool also includes some Skype functionality, which lets you click on a number in your browser and call it directly via Skype. Now, that's a nice feature sometimes, but the rest of it, I don't know. To me, any of these things, anybody can add in any kind of thing that they want when they download something for you, because they will get paid to do that, or maybe, you know, eBay owns Skype and they just throw it in or whatever. But the basic idea is that just because somebody offers you something like that doesn't mean you have to install it.
Well, what I did not like was the fact that Skype notified me that an update was available for their program. It never said, do you want to download and install this browser highlighter? It was incorporated in the package. Either you take it or you don't.
It wasn't in the fine print at the bottom of the message no one ever reads?
I did not
see
it.
Probably where it was hiding.
Yeah, so you know, I may have missed it, but basically I'm going to probably uninstall it.
It does
show up in my programs.
Yeah, I absolutely would. That sort of thing just angers me. Then I'm an anarchist. So,
are there any advantages to downloading some add-ons for the Firefox browser?
Many add-ons are very useful, but it depends entirely on the add-on. Like, for example, it might be very nice to be able to highlight a phone number in your browser, just click on it, and Skype will call it. But by throwing in all that other garbage along with it, that becomes a kind of a problem for me personally.
Yeah. All right, gentlemen. Thank you very much, and enjoy your day.
Thank you, and have fun.
Bye bye.
So, yeah, that's we see that a lot now, and everybody wants you to have their toolbar, essentially, on their browser because, then you are more likely to go to their website. Google has one. Everybody's got one.
I was on a customer's PC the other day, and they had the Google toolbar installed, the Yahoo toolbar, the ABG toolbar, the MSN toolbar. He had so many toolbars installed, I couldn't find the web window.
Yeah, right. We see that all the time. All right, our next caller is Dan. Where are you calling from, Dan?
From McDougal.
Where are you calling from?
McDougal, New York.
McDougal, New York. I don't know where that is.
6 miles south of Waterloo, up near the Seneca Army Depot.
Is that M-A-C Dougal or M-C Dougal?
M-A-C Dougal.
Okay, we don't want to get that wrong. And is the D capitalized?
Yes.
There you go. All right, what can we do to make you happier up there in McDougal, New York?
I have a Dell laptop with a Vista operating system. It's been a very good system. It's up to date on all its antiviruses and all that. One day I went to start it up, and code came up, says missing file. And it's an OX file, and when I Googled that on another machine, it says it's a Service Pack 2 number. So when I called Dell, this machine also will not start up in safe mode. And I also went back to the earliest part I could and to start up at an earlier date, and
right.
I can't get past that Service Pack 2 when that was installed. So, of course, Dell wants me to start all over again, level the machine.
Right.
And there's a couple of things on there we'd like to try to get off.
Which you didn't back up ever.
iTunes.
Well, iTunes you can just download.
I also...
And anything you bought from the iTunes store should still be, can you re-download stuff you bought?
Sometimes. Depends on how long ago you bought it.
Okay.
I
also bought
a hard drive
enclosure kit and took the hard drive out of the machine, and that's where I'm having a little bit of trouble trying to grab this information to try to, put it to a CD or...
Yeah, sometimes if you have another computer with exactly the same version of the OS, exactly the same service packs, exactly the same patches loaded, you can copy that missing file from the good machine to the bad machine. However, I've found more than often the next time you try to boot it again, there's another missing file.
Right.
So what you may be able to do is if you have a physical Windows disk, you can reinstall Windows over Windows, and that will not lose any of your stuff. The problem is Dell usually doesn't give you a physical Windows disk.
Right. And if you've been able to get the hard drive out of the machine and put it in another machine as a slave, you say you're having trouble getting the data off. What happened?
I see the photos. They gave me software in the machine, which is Roxio Back on Track. Now, I put that in the machine. Microsoft pops up and says it can't put it on my machine.
Well, you don't necessarily need that if what you're doing is trying to just copy the photos. If you can open the folder on that bad hard drive and see those files, then you should be able to copy them out of there to the other machine or burn them to a CD or whatever on the good machine without ever using additional software, just click and drag.
Okay.
Right? If you can do that, then you've got the data over. It may take a little longer. It's a little more manual process. But by doing it that way, you can, A, make sure you've got everything, and B, once you've got it, you've now got it on a second machine that hopefully is still working, and my suggestion would be to immediately burn all that stuff to disk.
Yes. Lesson learned with digital cameras.
Lesson learned with anything nowadays. You have to back up everything. Never, never, never assume that what you've got is backed up.
All right. Give it a try.
Good luck.
That brings up another point. Great item for Christmas. Right now, if you folks, just present it as a family gift,
mm-hmm.
is literally an external hard drive to back up your stuff. They're relatively cheap now. I mean, you can get a terabyte. That's a, with a T.
Yeah.
For around $100 or so.
And that's enough space to probably back up all the computers in your house.
And what's interesting is if you've got a an internal network where everybody's on it, mm-hmm. you can put this, you can get them that plug directly into the network. So you plug it into the yep. router if you've got an open port, and then all you have to do is it comes up and it comes up on the network, and then you can open it as if it were another drive out on a server. Unless you've got Windows Home, one of the home editions. Mm-hmm. And then you can very easily just copy all your files to it once in a while, and then they live on there as well as on your hard drive.
Well, that's becoming now, that very
doesn't,
popular.
And that doesn't alleviate the need to burn them to CD once in a while. Because anything can happen, and so the more copies you have, the better off you are.
Especially photos that don't change. Those are really good to burn to a CD. And use a good brand of CDs.
Yeah, don't go get cheap CDs.
Well, see, that's where, you know, I've been having folks, because they, again, are so cheap, worrying about CDs and that and failing. Again, I have them. I've got a couple clients. I literally have them with a Buffalo drive, like you say, the whole family. Everybody writes to that. So that's sitting there. Then they wound up turning around because they've got three kids. They had tons of photos, lots of music. So we got them a terabyte Buffalo drive. Now what I did is they turned around and they also bought two external USB drives that they hook up. The father hooks it up to the machine. And every night he's got it set that it copies all the stuff from the Buffalo drive mm-hmm. onto this other drive. And he has to do it once, you know, every night.
Yeah, two backups are better than one.
Well, he has this one. He uses that for the week. He puts that in the safe. He brings out the other one, and they rotate them each week. And he's got literally a list for everybody to make sure that, you know, that this is always checking. They make them responsible, so nothing's ever said, oh, I didn't get it. Well, did you check? You were supposed to check to make sure that it backed up. Did you? You know, and they're all very responsible.
Yep. And I know there's a whole bunch of you out there going, well, that's way too much work for me. Call and tell me that after you lose your data.
Or those family photos. I mean, I had another
If you don't have them backed up in three places, then don't call me when you've got a problem. Seriously.
Yeah, well, these were photos, I guess, back from World War II and even a couple World War I. I felt so bad for the person, and literally they're going to have to send it off to DriveSafer because it was one of these, you know, you plugged it in and all you hear is the actuators going click,
yep.
click, 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 yep. and there was nothing I could do. I said, I'm sorry. I said, you know, send it on. But I got to get those photos back. I said, well, it's going to cost you.
Yep. That's all there is to it.
Yeah.
And, you know, for stocking stuffers, USB thumb drive is great. A good box of burnable CDRs or DVD-Rs.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, as Steve said, make sure you get a decent brand because the cheap brands just aren't going to last. Half of them will be bad out of the box. Spend the extra $5, you cheap son of a gun, and mm-hmm. buy a decent quality.
That Kodak makes archival brand CDs and DVDs that use gold in them because gold is the better material to make these discs out of for layering the discs. And they're pretty expensive, but the CDs, I think, are rated for 300 years, and the DVDs are rated for 100 years.
And there's only one company that makes that sells them, and that's KPM Media. And they do a I have a box, and I use it for those precious photos. My daughter never had a haircut till she was 17 years old, 16 years old, and she finally went to get it cut. We took hundreds of pictures, and they're all on a nice preserved CD. So 100 years from now, her grandchildren.
And you can find a CD player.
Well, yeah.
yep.
That's a whole other story.
And they're sold at most of the stores in town that have photo processing centers, especially Kodak photo processing centers.
Yeah.
But Pete, no, Steve, what was his name?
Jobs.
From KMP.
Yeah, he came, talked with us one time.
Can't remember his last name.
Yeah,
sorry, Steve.
But I had somebody go in one time. I sat there and was telling him how, when you store the CDs,
mm-hmm.
you got to lay them flat.
Yep.
If you lay them on the side,
eventually they warp.
No, the data drips off.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
I had never really thinking that.
Right. And for those of you who are Ubuntu users, there is a thing called Ubuntu One, which is use it to back up and store, sync, share your data with other Ubuntu One users, and it's basically 2 gigabytes of storage up on the cloud. And for an extra 50 gigabytes, it's just $10 a month.
Yeah, there are several.
That's ridiculously cheap. 50 gigabytes for 10,
that kind of 10 insurance?
Right. 50 gigabytes for 10 bucks a month. 10 bucks a month, and all those World War II photos would have been safe forever. Because now Ubuntu worries about backing them up and having them in multiple data centers and whatever, whatever. And so you've contracted with them that they're not going to lose them.
Yeah, exactly.
There's several easy-to-use backup programs you can get if it's too much hassle for you. I've been playing a little bit with Carbonite. Which is $5 a month for unlimited space.
There you go. That's even cheaper.
It's Mac and Windows. I'm trying to see if it works with Linux, too. On the cloud, there's another one called Dropbox, which is 2 gigabytes for free. If you want more than that, you pay a little bit.
That's the same thing as Ubuntu One, yeah.
Yeah, so there's a lot of automatic backup programs. Mac OS X now has Time Machine built into it for automatic backup, and the Restore works pretty good. That was one of the jokes in Windows for years. It came with a really good backup program, but a crappy Restore program.
Yeah, that's unfortunately not a joke for the people who tried to use it.
You used to get through that whole stack of 30 disks, and you would get to number 29.
And it wouldn't work.
And it crapped out, and...
Well, and in addition, you know, you can, 2 gigabytes doesn't sound like a lot, but if you're not storing photos, if it's your documents and things, 2 gigabytes is a massive amount of storage. There are also programs you can use that will store your data up in your Gmail space. You get 7 gigabytes there. So, you know, there's no excuse anymore. I'm sorry, there's just no excuse for not having your stuff backed up somewhere where it's safe. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Celebrating 20 years on air, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
The Jazz 90.1 member card is more than just a card. It's our way of thanking you for supporting Jazz 90.1. Because in return, you can save money all year long by showing your Jazz 90.1 member card for discounts at local Jazz 90.1 member card businesses, including 45 East Fine Jewelers, Adams Basin Inn, Antonetta's Italian Restaurant, The Bop Shop, Bert Shapiro Photography, Hedonist Artisan Chocolates, Leaf and Bean Coffee Company, Lorraine's Food Factory, Mary Boyce of Mario's Hair Studio, Mind and Body Connection, New Health Cafe, Small World Bakery, Sound Source, Tuxedo Corner, Irondequoit and Gates locations, Enright PC Management, and Holland Music Studios. Carry your Jazz 90.1 member card and show it when you shop. For a complete and up-to-date list of member card businesses, visit our website at www.jazz901.org. To get your member card, call 966-5299. That's 966-JAZZ, and become a member of Jazz 90.1.
Join us on Sundays 5 to 7 on Jazz 90.1 for Big Road Blues, an exploration of vintage blues spanning the 1920s through the 1970s. Tune in to Big Road Blues with host Jeff Harris as he digs deep into blues history, spotlighting blues legends and forgotten blues heroes. Along the way, he'll fill you in on the stories and history behind the music. That's Big Road Blues every Sunday, 5 to 7 on Jazz 90.1 with your host, Jeff Harris.
Hello, this is Joelle Van Buren. Join me weekday mornings from 6 till 10 on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 42 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Yeah, we were talking before the break about backing stuff up using Google. What's nice about that, of course, is now you've got up to 7 gigabytes of storage. There are programs you can download from Softpedia or whatever that let you use Gmail as your backup drive, essentially. It becomes another drive in your system.
Your G-Disk.
Your G-Disk. And then you can back up all your data to your G-Disk, and then Google worries about keeping it in the cloud. And even if your computer dies, You buy another PC, you set it up, you run that same Gmail backup program, it connects your G drive, bang, you've got your data back again. You get 7 gigabytes.
And we're
again,
back
to- not enough for the big pictures or music, but for all your documents and all those important things, they're up there. Now, of course, as you were about to say, you're back to
trusting Google again.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. But any one of those you'd have to trust, you know?
Yeah.
You also generally get some amount of storage from your ISP vendor, whoever gives you your internet connectivity, and so you can store some documents up there. So really, there's less and less excuse anymore for not backing up your stuff.
We had a customer who felt so bad for her. She bought her backup drive. She sat down, took everything out of the box, was reading the instructions. So that was her first mistake.
Yeah.
Went to plug it into the computer, and her computer died.
I'm sorry. That's not funny. Yes, it is.
Horrible timing. We always joke that they know. They know you've got a deadline. They know you've got a paper due. They know you've got something important. And that's when they fail. And
My old car knew I was buying a new car. Yep. I had two, essentially, each one was a car payment, things I had to fix in the old car before I got the new car.
And the machines talk to each other at night.
Yes.
And they plan out things. So that you can, you have to worry about what's going to fail next.
Exactly.
Water heater talks to the refrigerator.
Mm-hmm. They plot behind
the furnace.
All right, here's back to the news. Apple has released 2 Java updates. Apple has released 2 Java updates: Java for Mac OS 10.
I have a friend that lives in Java.
10.6 update 1, and Java for Mac OS 10 10.5 update 6. Who cares if you've got Leopard or Snow Leopard? You need this update. Both include a number of security fixes, with the Leopard update being the heftier of the two, weighing in at 122 megabytes. If you're curious about precisely what terrifying security vulnerabilities are being protected from this time, you can run down the full list for the Snow Leopard or Leopard flavors of the update, which you can find on Apple's site. Both fix a number of vulnerabilities in Java 1.6.0_15, including one that would allow an untrusted Java applet to obtain elevated privileges with which it could potentially do nasty things. So this is an actual vulnerability in a Mac, all you smug, uncaring people. You can actually get this thing, and it will elevate privileges behind your back without asking you a question. So you need to be careful. And the Java one also fixes a bunch of problems in Java 1.5.0_20, pretty much along the same lines. So those two updates also share a fix for a loophole in which an expired certificate for an applet could be regarded as valid. The updates are available now via Apple support downloads page or in the software update itself. Something tells me you've probably got just enough time to grab a cup of coffee while they install. I've got a list of what those bug lists are, and Steve will get them online in just a moment. So our question to you: do you update Apple stuff right away? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or 1-800-790-0415. If you're outside the 585 area code, you can call us toll free, just like Bob did. Where are you calling from?
Oh, sorry, Bob. Hang on just a second. One thing that's interesting to note on this, and scary to note, is it only supports 10.5 and 10.6. The current version of the OS and one version ago.
Yes.
If you're running 10.4, 10.3, 10.2.
Oh, well, yeah.
The current version and one version ago, which is pretty much what Microsoft is doing, too.
Yep, and that's all they do nowadays. That's all anybody cares about, so you need to be up to date. Our next caller, Bob. Where are you calling from, Bob?
I'm Bob. I'm calling from Rochester, New York.
And what's your question?
I don't have a question. I want to tell you what I did for myself yesterday.
Okay.
I did myself a favor. I ordered from Tiger Direct a device for $25 that the box says USB to IDE SATA cable adapter.
Dave and I use these all the time for machines in our shop.
And I've got, I hate to throw stuff out that I see might have potential future value, so I've got a big stack of like 20 gig, 15 gig, 40 gig hard drives,
yeah.
IDE, that they're in working order, but they have no practical use today. So I bought this device, and it enables me to lay the bare drive on my desk, on my physical desktop, mm-hmm. Sitting on an anti-static bag, and mm-hmm. I hook it up to the device, and then the device to the USB port.
Mm-hmm.
And what I did was I copied using ordinary drag and drop, you know,
yep.
Windows tools. My archived photographs, all
there
my
you
photographs,
go. Nice.
Onto the thing, and I did likewise with all our purchased music.
Yeah.
And I disconnected it and stuck it in the static bag, and I took it to the bank and stuck it in the safe deposit box.
Oh, Bob, we love you.
That's a great use for old hard drives.
Yeah, old hard drives.
Here's I've got over four such drives with data, so now
nice.
I have a snapshot of yesterday. Locked away.
Oh, Bob, you're a very smart human
being.
Dave and Steve hate you, of course, because that means you won't be bringing your machine to them with panic in your voice.
No, I won't.
You know what you might want to do just for tickles and grin, though, Bob?
Yeah.
Just as an extra false save, you might want to order another one of those devices.
I understand your point.
And put it in the safe deposit box just in case this one gets damaged.
And it's only $25.
Yeah. I expect they'll have these from now on.
Well, never expect.
Yeah.
You know?
But I do keep an old IDE machine handy.
Let me give you one more suggestion, though, too. And that would be if you've got an extra 20 gigs sitting around,
yeah.
Put it in your machine as a second drive,
yeah.
And move your temp files to it, your temp directory, and put your swap file on it.
Yeah.
You'd be amazed on older machines, particularly, not so much on the you know, very newest,
yeah.
But on older machines, it speeds them up astonishingly.
Yeah, good idea.
Yeah, and this one, the universal drive adapters like these are just, you know, series of raw wires that mm-hmm. that will scare some people.
Yeah.
There are companies that make little docking bays for raw hard drives that are a little cleaner, but they cost a little more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let me mention in addition that this device will accommodate IDE and SATA, and also it's got
2.5 and 3.5 also, yeah.
Which is something I don't use, but it's
mm-hmm. Good universal
like it.
Device.
Yeah, it's really good. The 2.5 drives are used in laptops,
yeah.
And most laptops don't have two bays, because the real thing you want to often do is copy data from your old computer to your new computer. You need two bays, and laptops generally don't, so it makes it hard to copy from one to another.
Yeah.
And this little adapter
it
works.
Okay, thanks for listening.
Bob,
we're
in awe of you, Bob. Thank you very much. That's an excellent use for older hardware. In fact, that's an excellent use for newer hardware.
You know what that means? We're doing one thing, getting the word out there.
Yep.
And folks are listening and taking our advice before something, you know, they're calling us and saying, oh,
and every once in a while, those seeds fall on fallow ground, and
mm-hmm.
that's a nice thing to see.
That's great.
And, you know, as I was just saying, that's also a good use for new hardware. Hard drives are not that expensive anymore,
mm-mm.
So you could easily go out and buy a hard drive and one of these adapters for $25, stick it on the machine, back up all your data to it, and do it that way as well. Maybe that's a good third backup, right? Or your second backup, really. So you buy one of those drives that sits on the network, and that's where you back stuff up generally. And then every once, maybe once a month, you take all the data that have been on that network drive and stick it on one of these drives and send it somewhere else. So we'll let that soak in your heads as we go to our next caller. Joanne, where are you calling from?
Greece.
And what's your question, Joanne?
I got two.
Okay.
One is I'm in Excel, and I, you know, you have all the data on these little lines.
Right.
I want to make the print bigger and the row taller, and I do it on the computer, and it's bigger and taller, and then I print it, and it always comes back in the small print.
There are two ways to do it. There's a view menu where you can view it bigger. And that
okay.
sounds like what you're doing.
Okay.
And then there's a font menu that will make the font bigger.
Okay.
So it gets bigger on screen and bigger on your printout.
Okay.
So you have to select your text that
and
you want to change.
Here's another tip. You see across the top it's ABC.
Mm-hmm.
And down the side, it's 1, 2, 3.
Yep.
And in that upper right corner next to the A and above the 1, there's that blank space.
Yep.
Click there. It selects the whole sheet.
Then you can change all of the text at once.
Okay.
Yep.
I'll give that a try.
And then I don't remember where it is in Excel offhand, but there's a font size option, and maybe in a type menu or font menu, where you actually make the characters bigger instead of the view menu, where you make the view of the characters bigger.
That's probably what I was doing.
There you go.
Menu. Yep. Okay. Other quick question.
Sure.
I go into a site like Avery, the
Label people.
Okay, so I get their website, download what they tell me to download, and they constantly ask me for another cookie. I must do it 20 times.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What's going on?
A lot of places, when you go to a website, the first thing they do is print a bunch of ads down the sides.
Mm-hmm.
And each of those ads wants to set its own cookie. Many people don't see them because they just automatically accept cookies.
Yeah.
That's a really bad idea. That's how people track you across the internet, okay. And that's how you get all those ads you really don't want. And
yeah.
So what you do is you read where the ad is coming from fairly carefully. Mm-hmm. And if it's coming from Avery, then accept it. And if it's coming from somewhere else, deny.
Yeah, they were Avery.
Oh, then some of them you want, but even so, some of them are tracking. They're just ad cookies.
And the only way, and you just have to keep clicking them in order to continue with the program.
Well, and what browser are you using?
Internet Explorer.
Firefox?
Firefox.
One of the choices when one of those labels comes off, there's a box that says, remember this selection, or don't, depending on what version you're running, don't ask me again or whatever.
Uh-huh.
What that means is when you say, I am accepting or denying this cookie, it remembers that and won't ask you again the next time.
All right. I shall try that, too.
There you go.
Okay, thank you so much.
Our pleasure.
Isn't there also a setting to never ask you at all for third-party cookies? Never accept third-party cookies?
Never accept third-party cookies. But if they're all coming through Avery, then she'll still get that because they're still first-party cookies.
Yeah, it's the advertiser on Avery would be the third-party cookie.
Right. But if it's coming through Avery, and in other words, if Avery's remembering it, and now, for example, when you go to the Security Tango website, you either see an ad for Frontier or you see an ad for MyMinders. I don't, but I could, I suppose, if I really wanted to, keep track of all that stuff and say, dear Frontier, you know, or dear MyMinders, you had 17,000 hits this month and you owe me this much money. That's, you know, that would be the kind of thing you might have.
Did you find out why the Security Tango was down? It's back up. That's good.
Yeah, I emailed Jerry last night and then I went to bed. So
oops.
I didn't even look at my email this morning. But I know Jerry's out doing. Jerry, God love him. He's, you know, a 24-hour worker and whatever. He was probably moving stuff around to a better server. I know Jerry, and that's what he would be doing. So, yeah, that's the kind of thing he does.
Yeah. I still thought that was pretty good. ABC.
You would think that was pretty good.
Well, you led right into it.
I did. I absolutely did.
The way you did it, I thought you were going into a Michael Jackson song there.
There you go.
Even though we're on jazz.
I do not, in point of fact, moonwalk. I need to let the...
That'd be cool to see.
I know that's a disappointment to you, Dave, but I do not, in point of fact, actually moonwalk. I know. I have moonwalked in the past, but ever since the arthritis hit that knee, I don't do the moonwalk so much anymore.
That's a Berry Gordy song.
That Don't Do the Moonwalk is a Berry Gordy song?
ABC 123.
There you go. Mm-hmm. There you go.
All right.
We need people sending us a video of them moonwalking.
No.
All our listeners.
Well, I'd like to hear from some of the other folks, though, what they're hoping to get to. Like I say, I see so many of these ads right now, you know, in the paper and that for these different machines. I'd like to know what these folks think about it. Mm-hmm. Are we nuts? You know, are they really being taken in by all these great deals that they think they're getting?
Yeah.
You see, in fact, well, this week we sold a customer a Lenovo laptop, 15-inch laptop, and it was $499. And so I'm looking at the specs because Apple's least expensive laptop is $999. And so I look at the specs of this Lenovo, and it's the same Apple was using 3 years ago.
Yep.
So, so the $999 laptop, if it's 3 years old, it'd be about $499.
Yep.
So, and that's one way they're making them cheaper is that it's old chips that are running slower.
And even though you sold a lower-end laptop to somebody, they bought it from a local vendor.
Yep.
They have you to go back to if they have a problem. You buy stuff like that on the net, and if there's a problem or whatever, you got nothing but a phone number, you got nothing but an email address, and you got nothing but wait time while it goes back and forth to you that you pay for the shipping.
Well, one of the other things I was pointing out to them, they said, well, look at this. I can still get it with Windows XP on it. I go, that just proves to show you that it's something, it's old. It hasn't been, it doesn't even have Vista or that on it. It's an older model. That's why they're selling it for, you know, $350.
Holy cow. Right.
Yeah, throw in memory. I mean, yeah, they can throw in, you know, even a gig of memory, that only adds a couple bucks to their costs. But if they're getting rid of the old equipment, it's better than sitting there and eating it and have that inventory, you know, just ticking away, costing them megabucks in inventory.
Right. And if you're one of those people who likes to tinker with stuff, or maybe you're looking for an old machine, a less powerful machine to test Linux on, or you just want a backup server somewhere, those kinds of machines, if you know what you're doing and how you're doing it and all that stuff, is absolutely useful. But for the average person who's looking to buy, you know, I got another call like this just yesterday. I'm looking to buy a new computer. Tell me about these netbooks. You know, are they worth it? Well, I own a netbook, so I was telling them all about it, and eventually he said, so that's great. So I can do my email, and I can do my web browsing, and I can play all my games.
No.
I never said games.
Yep.
I never said games.
The netbook is not designed to be your only computer.
Right.
It's a light alternative to carry around for your big computer you have
and
at home.
And it's useful for people who don't do gaming, mm-hmm. you know? For example...
Or video editing or photo editing.
Right, right. You know, your grandmother, maybe. Somebody who really just wants to connect with you, and many of them come with a camera so you can do video chatting and stuff. But you're not going to do high-end gaming. You're not going to do high-end graphics stuff. But for email and web browsing and the occasional chat sort of thing, it's perfect. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. We are the longest-running computer show in the known universe, and you know who we are, so say it with me. We are Soundbites. And, oh, by the way, you are listening to us on member-supported Jazz 90.1. There's a handful of these kind of places out on the web, out in the world, places that still play jazz. These people have taken us in and given us all their love and support. So it's up to you to remember that and when it comes time to support them, because they are member-supported. So we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more sound bites on Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
America's longest-running computer show. Sound bites, celebrating 20 years.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Meet the faces of influenza, groups who should be immunized every year.
I have a chronic medical condition.
Asthma.
Pregnant during influenza season.
We live with a baby under 6 months old.
In the group 6 months through 18 years.
Age 50 or older.
Care for someone at risk.
I'm Christy Yamaguchi. See your healthcare provider about getting vaccinated. It's a safe and effective way to prevent influenza. Visit facesofinfluenza.org.
This message addresses seasonal influenza, a public service from the American Lung Association.
Businesses benefit from underwriting Jazz 90.1. Not only do you reach about 20,000 listeners a week, that includes listeners who only listen to jazz. In addition to being beneficial, underwriting Jazz 90.1 is very affordable. To find out how your business can benefit from underwriting Jazz 90.1, call 966-2660. That's 966-2660.
Army Specialist Andrew Pike became paralyzed while serving in Iraq.
My injury was a gunshot wound to the left abdomen from a sniper. My first contact with paralyzed veterans was in Walter Reed.
Paralyzed veterans and National Service Officer Michael Killen.
We try to reassure them what benefits are out there, try to educate them and take some of that stress away from them.
Right now I'm going back to school to earn a degree, and I'm just spending time with my wife and child.
You can help our paralyzed veterans. Visit pva.org.
What do you love about the radio?
I just like the variety, because it can put you in different moods and you don't know what to expect. I think it's my favorite part is you don't know what to expect. So I always get excited when the song is over, because I'm excited for what the next song is going to be.
New artist Caitlin Crosby loves radio.
Still have my heart. You still have my heart.
Discover Caitlin Crosby and other new artists where it's good to be heard. Radio. Always something new and fresh, always free. Go to RadioHeardHere.com.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Steve is off in the ether somewhere. He'll be back in just a moment.
Yeah, he's updating one of the operating systems on
one of the station's computers. Analysts, IDC analysts, have published a list of predictions for 2010. One of those predictions is that 2010 will be the year of the app. It may seem like apps are ubiquitous now, but if IDC analysts are even half right, you ain't seen nothing yet. IDC predicts that Apple will top 300,000 apps and Android will break 100,000 in 2010. The ICD predictions state it will be a watershed year in the ascension of mobile devices as strategic platforms for commercial and enterprise developers as over 1 billion access the Internet, iPhone apps triple, Android apps quintuple, and Apple's iPad arrives. Stop and think about that for a minute. For Apple to reach 300,000 apps in 2010, it would need to add about 180,000 more than it has now. To achieve that growth over 52 weeks, Apple would have to approve 692 apps per day, not including weekends, and I'm not sure they're going to do that. They don't have that many people saying, oh yeah, shaking baby is okay, but you can't put an iPhone picture up. Apple claims to receive approximately 10,000 new app submissions every week, so the volume is certainly there from a submission standpoint. However, it would seem that Apple would have to significantly streamline and expedite the app approval process if it wants to hit those kinds of lofty numbers. The Android prediction paints a similarly challenging scenario. Android is at about 20,000 apps right now, but to add 80,000 additional apps to the Android market, Google would need to add 307 apps every day. Not including weekends, for 52 weeks. And although the Android market is the leading challenger for the Apple iPhone App Store, too many apps in that word, in that phrase, it is a very distant second in terms of app volume. A recent survey of Android developers found that a majority are unhappy with the Android market and dissatisfied with the revenue they receive for developing apps for Android. Assuming the survey results have some validity, Google will need to remedy that. Apparently, developers are going to be very busy cranking out apps in 2010, no matter what platform we're talking about. Of course, having hundreds of thousands of apps is as much a curse as it is a blessing. The variety of app stores needed to streamline the shopping and browsing process and find ways to help users find what they need out of the vast library of apps. I don't have time to casually peruse 100,000 apps to see what strikes my fancy. App overkill? It seems like we're heading there if we aren't there already. Rest assured that whatever you want to need, there will be an app for that. Are you waiting for that one special app, or are you downloading every app in sight? Are you writing apps? Give us a call and let us know. 966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. And here's one interesting thing. I'd like to hear from somebody who'd like to be willing to donate their time and talent to create an app for both the iPhone and the Android for Soundbites.
Oh, that'd be cool.
That would be very nice. I'd love to do that, but none of us really have a lot of that talent. So if you do, please email me, Nick at AskNick.com, and say you'd like to write. And I want one for both. I'm not going to play favorites here. I need one that runs equally well on both the Android operating system and the iPhone.
iTouch also.
Well, the iTouch and the iPhone, that's one operating system.
99% identical, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Unless you're writing something that actually requires the phone, then it'll run just as well on the iPhone.
Or the video camera or the GPS.
I just love my touch.
Yeah,
sure. I mean, that has, you know, the other thing I was, where you're talking about apps and that, I noticed, and I'm sure you guys have too, the war between AT&T and Verizon.
Oh,
goodness. They both gave up their lawsuits.
And yeah.
The app window. We got an app for that.
Yeah.
We got a map for that. But, I mean, they just keep, you know, hitting and hitting and hitting.
There was a couple of interesting ones that AT&T did have about one of the things that the AT&T GSM network lets you do is talk on the phone and surf the web at the same time.
Yeah, they got a guy. They got a guy holding the other phone for the guy while he's sitting.
Well,
there.
Now excuse me, but my friend Tom has a droid, and he was on the phone talking to someone, checked his email, sent a reply, took a picture, sent that with it all the same time he was talking on the phone. So I don't know where...
Is it GSM or CDMA?
Whatever Verizon is here in Rochester.
Yeah. Well, I see. I think they were just pointing out the average phone, not the Droid. See, that's where I think, you know, again, just like...
Probably Google has their own hooks into it. So, yeah, you can do a Google... You do Google Mail, but looking...
No, he was doing IMAP to our mail server.
Hmm.
But like on the ad, though, I think what they're showing is two just regular phones, you know?
Yeah. Because
they're also touting whether you can, you know, transfer your minutes and all this other stuff. And the other guy's literally throwing the postcards as he's walking around.
Yeah.
You
Here's
know,
our
the,
coverage map, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but it's their coverage map, but not their 3G coverage, which is... Mm-hmm. So it's not apples to oranges. What Verizon is talking about is 3G, and what AT&T is talking about is simple coverage.
Yeah, and that's where folks have to, you know the difference.
When the 4G network comes along in the next couple of years, that both of the CDMA and GSM are going to the same 4G network, which is LTE. So we won't
that
have
goes away,
right? We won't have these have fights between the two different network carriers.
Right.
I was talking yesterday with some of us from Apple Cider did a talk at the JCC at SeniorNet on the iPhone, and this one woman. I was talking about the 3G phone network and the 4G phone network, and she didn't understand what I was talking about. She thought I was mispronouncing Fiji, the country.
Oh, there you go.
I'm talking about the 4G phone network.
Right. But 4G essentially is fourth generation.
Yeah, fourth generation.
Third
phone.
Generation phone network.
In
fourth
fact,
generation.
It wasn't until iPhone started commercials talking about their 3G network that anyone knew what network we were in.
Right. Nobody really cared.
Yeah,
right.
Well, they didn't.
And
they didn't need to.
Right.
Yeah.
And well, here in Western New York, both Verizon and AT&T have excellent coverage. But in a lot of parts of the country, I have friends who have iPhones and they can't get fast coverage.
Yep.
And that's exactly the thing that.
That's the one thing that AT&T's commercials were pointing out is they have their 2G network and their 1G network. So on AT&T, if you can't get 3G, you can go back to 2G, which is called Edge.
Right.
With Verizon, if you don't have 3G, you don't have anything.
No, that's not true either. Tom took a vacation and he was suddenly down to 1X.
Right. That's 1X. That's 1G.
Okay.
That's not.
He's still on.
Right, you're still on, but there's no in-between speed like AT&T has.
It's three or one. It's
yeah.
Most of it's three, so he was rarely in one. So it's not, you know,
that actually is the big issue with the Verizon phones and the CDMA network in general is it's pretty much only used in the U.S. Very few other countries in the world use CDMA, which is one of the reasons Apple went with a GSM carrier. They can make a single phone that works pretty much everywhere.
Right. But come 4G, they'll all do that.
Right.
Of course, you'll have to buy a new phone to get that because
yep.
it's a whole different chipset.
Well, that'll be another year or so, and you'll want that already. Although Sprint is advertising their 4G network is starting now.
You're right.
I guess all of the companies have started the test marketing the 4G network.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But it's
going to
be a couple, 3 years before it's full rollout.
Right. If you're in that one little area in Kansas where they're actually testing it, you know, with eight people who have cell phones, then yeah, I'd love to get calls from people in Kansas saying, we have phones. I'm talking on one now.
Matter of fact, speaking of folks in other states, I got to say hello and glad she's finally home. Is Dory. Over there in Omaha, Nebraska, she finally came home from the hospital. Glad I know she's back up listening on the web with us. They've called in before.
Excellent.
And just recovering from surgery, so I want to wish her all the best. And had quite an ordeal there.
Yeah, you told
so,
me.
But she's
yeah.
back and doing good, and glad to have her aboard.
Yeah, she's
glad
been in
she's
our prayers.
Back on the streams. Yep.
Good for her.
Yep.
Listen, I got a question for you folks out there, and I need you to put something in the forums, call us up, and tell us what you want. We've had the Soundbites website up and running for a very, very long time, and we've been running on the bulletin board software, PHP bulletin board software. But the world has moved on. There's this group called ELG, ELGG at ELG.org, and what they have is kind of a social engine. It's got groups, which are essentially the forums, but they also have a Twitter-like thing, and you can create profiles for yourself and put up pictures. You can blog. You can do all this other stuff, share bookmarking and things like that. But so I was wondering, the problem is I'd love to switch to it, but to do so, we kind of have to dump all the old stuff.
Ooh, there's no import?
There's no import that I've been able to find yet. So I'll keep looking, but, you know, I've been reluctant to go to it, and then we lose hundreds of thousands of years of stuff. But there isn't one that works well. I've done some testing. There were a couple out there that said they did it, but, boy, they were not good. So the real question is, you know, and this is something I guess I'll have to think about myself. Do we – I mean, I'll be able to archive it up there, you know, just put it up there as a separate link, and people can go read it but not add to it. I'll close off all the forums so people can go back and look at old stuff, and then we just, I kind of guess, start fresh. But there's a lot of interesting things you can do with a product like Elg, and I'm interested in moving us to it to give us more of an interesting community network site.
One question, though. What about the user database?
Yeah, there's two halves of the puzzle. There's
right.
the user database
right.
and
because,
the postings.
And that's the other thing I have to figure out how to move over.
The other thing, though, is because there are literally hundreds,
thousands,
thousands of bad, IDs.
Right, right, right.
That's one thing folks don't realize in the forums. You know, granted, I don't have the time to get into it as much as I'd like to, because literally daily, I am cleaning out or denying over, I'll say, 50 requests a day minimum, trying to get into the board and post stuff. And this is all stuff, folks, trust me, you don't want to see posted.
Yeah, we have 35,000 users and 67,000 articles.
Right, right. And even if we lose the articles, I mean, I can always just set them there as something you can refer back to. But we have to be able to move the people. And what I'd love to be able to do is move only the people who've ever posted.
Yep.
Yes.
You know, still have some.
Yeah,
you still have some bad ones.
That's fine.
But very few.
It would trim it down.
At Cider, we're running into a new problem now. We just switched from PHPBB to PunBB, and it has an authentication process for users. They have to respond to an email. They have to verify their user identification before they can post information. Well, someone's figured out how to bypass that, apparently,
yep.
And now we're getting lots of crap in our forums again.
Could you also incorporate, you know, like to verify, you know, how you have to put in that other code?
Mm-hmm. CAPTCHA. Yeah.
CAPTCHAs. I hate CAPTCHAs because I can barely read them.
Right.
Yeah, but still, it would save the robot for a lot of the erroneous.
No, a lot of them do that now. They understand CAPTCHAs, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's real pain.
Well, you know,
there was a, who was it? Sorry, I forget what news site I was reading it about, but someone put up a like a striptease website where with every CAPTCHA you typed in, the girl would take some clothes off. Then they would use that CAPTCHA to go sign up for a Google account. So they're crowdsourcing their piracy.
it's kind of Rule 34 for CAPTCHAs, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
You know, it's like we've said, and we've said it for years, and we've been saying it for over 20 years. They put up a fence to guard against things, and they find a way around it. They put up another fence, they find a way around that. And it's an ongoing battle, no matter whether it's PC, Mac, or whatever. It's an ongoing battle trying to stay one step ahead of these idiots that are trying to get you over to their sites or whatever, you know. It's just hard. I mean, you know, the folks don't realize it sometimes. And, you know, as a matter of fact, I had another client well, you know, I've been cleaning out and it just keeps. Yeah, you got to keep doing it. Well, it's a pain in the butt. Well,
yep. Update every day, scan at least every week, if not every day.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. It's a real problem. But anyway, I've been thinking about that. I've been thinking of moving to Elg because it becomes a whole community. You get to do some pretty interesting stuff with it. You know, I don't expect it to become, you know, the next Twitter or something. But for our people to be able to post things quickly, to be able to get in and do stuff, it gives them more capabilities. And we could have video. We could upload videos. You could upload whatever, whatever. And I'm interested in that, but I don't know quite how to move all our users over. I don't want to just say to everybody, hey, guess what? Start up again.
Yeah, no, I like you say, I think if we sit there and say, you know, anybody that's posted, say, in the past 2 years.
Right.
You know, bring those folks over. Because, you know, They haven't been on in the past 2 years.
All of our bad, at Cider, all of our bad users are coming in from a Pakistan domain.
Right, right.
I mean, you know.
At home, I can't tell you how many filters I have to say if it comes from RU, dump it. If it comes from PK, dump it. Of course, I can't do that at work because I actually get mail from those places sometimes legitimately. It's a pain in the neck at work. But at home, I've dumped almost every foreign domain there is.
And but if it's a file that you could pull out, you know, you want me to go through it. Because, you know, because we know, say, the first, 100. Yeah. Pages or so are good.
And this is a person that they've registered dozens of usernames. It's a person posting ads for an exam builder website.
Yeah.
So exam builder is probably paying people to post ads.
Yeah.
And
or they work for exam builder.
Well, it probably says in their fine print, you're not going to do anything illegal.
Yeah, right,
You're not going to spam anybody.
Yeah, right.
But we'll pay you for every ad you post.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's an ongoing battle. And like I said before, it's...
Yep.
So, yeah, I don't know quite what I'm going to do about that, but I'd love to move to something that reflected the fact that Soundbites is a community.
Maybe that should be next week's poll.
You know, maybe it will be. Maybe
you know,
it will
I
be.
Mean,
we'll
that'd
see.
Be a good one. How do you feel? You for or against, trashing what we have and starting over, again, trying to keep at least the users. We can work on that and just start all over from that point.
Yep, maybe. We'll see what happens. Maybe I'll just make it a poll in the forums. But then, of course, it self-selects, because if you don't go into the forums, you're not going to take the poll. So, yeah.
Catch 22.
Yeah, maybe we'll make it the real poll at the beginning of the website, and we'll see what that's about. I've got Elg running on a system at work, and I don't entirely understand it yet, but it certainly is pretty nifty, and it certainly seems to do what it is you need done. It's pretty cool, actually. It does have Twitter-like features, so if you wanted to go in, sometimes an entire post is not really what you're looking for. You just want to type in something quick. There's you can create your own blogs. They call them groups, but essentially they're discussion forums, and it's a pretty neat thing. But that's not important right now. What is important right now is that we're going to take a quick break. So we will be back in just a minute or so with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Helping you with your computer questions for over 20 years. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hi, this is Otto Bruno, inviting you to a musical party this and every week on the Sunday Music Festa and the Otto Show. Our guests may include Frank Sinatra, Tony Bennett, Bing Crosby, Rosemary Clooney, or who knows, maybe even Count Basie or Joe Williams, Bobby Darin. Lady Ella herself could stop by. It's a musical celebration every week on the Sunday Music Festa and the Otto Show. That's Sundays at 12 noon right here on Jazz 90.1.
Hello, I'm Linda Wildman, volunteer DJ, wishing you and yours the happiest of holidays from all of us at Jazz 90.1.
I'm Steve Wozniak, and you're listening to Soundbites.
Jazz 90.1, streaming online worldwide at jazz901.org.
Hi, this is Charles Benoit. Join me and the entire Smart Set tonight from 5 to 6 right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 21 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. On Thursday, Comcast and NBC Universal agreed in principle to merge. However, federal regulatory approval could be intense and could last longer than the full year that top officials at the two media companies suggest. A variety of consumer interest and net neutrality proponents, as well as small broadcasters, raised concerns about the deal. Those concerns include The new entity could stifle competition from small internet video streaming companies and pose threats to consumer privacy through data collected with new interactive cable technology. Already, U.S. Representative Henry Waxman, Democrat of California, chairman of the U.S. House Committee on Energy and Commerce, has raised red flags about the deal and has promised to hold hearings on it. Beg your pardon. It is imperative that the Federal Communications Commission, the Federal Trade Commission, and the Justice Department rigorously assess whether this transaction is in the public interest, Waxman said. The FCC said through a spokesindividual that the agency is committed to a thorough, fair, and fact-based review of the merger. Waxman said he is concerned not only about competitive issues, but also the future of the production and distribution of video content across broadcasting, cable, online, and mobile platforms. The joint venture, valued at $37 billion, would control 82% of cable programming channels, according to Comcast officials. Regulators will be concerned whether Comcast, operating in certain cities where it dominates cable TV access, could limit access to its video content by other cable providers. The agency will also be watching whether Comcast could limit access to its content to emerging video providers that use wired or wireless networks, said two antitrust experts. In addition, Comcast's future video content might somehow be restricted from other sources of television traffic, such as rival Verizon DSL, he added. Antitrust attorney Brian Weinberger, at the firm of Buchholter Niemer in Los Angeles, said in an interview that he expects serious scrutiny of the merger by various regulatory agencies that could last 18 months because so many third parties want to weigh in on the comments. Weinberger also said that industry groups representing sports programmers, among others, might object to the merger, noting NBC's strong coverage of sporting events, including the Olympics. Okay, AFCC will probably review city by city the amount of cable and internet distribution that Comcast currently has and will likely stipulate how it distributes content in each location, Weinberger said. What do you think about the Comcast-NBC Universal merger? Give us a call, 966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299. If you're outside the 585 area code, call us toll free, 1-800-790-0415. I don't know quite how I feel about that. Having somebody control 82%, 82% of all cable access, that's close enough to a monopoly to make me nervous.
And one of the thoughts is that Comcast is buying NBC so they can either kill Hulu or turn it into pay only, because they you know, the TV companies and the cable companies don't want you to watch stuff for free. They want you to pay them. In fact, what really irks me is they get paid both ways. They get paid for the cable subscription and they get paid for the internet subscription. They want to get paid a third way when you watch video on the internet.
Yeah, it's not that they're not making money. They don't think they're making enough money. You know, somebody somewhere is making money that could be theirs. I hate people. All right, our next I don't hate our callers, and our next caller is Tom. Where are you calling from, Tom? Tom, are you there?
There, try now.
Tom?
Yes.
Yeah, where are you calling from?
I'm on a cell phone in the Parenton Town Park right now, but
there you go.
I have a Dell Inspiron laptop, which I think we bought in 2002, and doesn't have very much memory, so I've set the display to minimum resolution, minimum color. But each time I reboot, it automatically goes to maximum resolution and maximum color. What does that, and how can I stop it from doing that?
What operating system are you running?
Yeah.
Windows XP.
Which service pack?
Three.
Okay. Backing up a step, the resolution of the monitor has nothing to do with memory being used. You need to go into your BIOS and deallocate memory for graphics if you want to use less memory for graphics and more memory for your the rest of your stuff.
But he's talking about size, aren't you? The actual pixel?
Yeah, the size and colors of the pixels, Even though you set it to a lower resolution.
With maximum resolution, the disk light is on all the time and response is, slower than molasses.
All right.
Well, yeah, because it's using more of your RAM because it's a shared video card.
So when you change it, though, and it, you know how it'll give you, do you want to keep this current setting? You're saying okay?
Yes. And it remains that way as long as I'm powered up. But next time I boot up from power off condition, it starts up in that low resolution mode, but then automatically switches to the high resolution again. After it's been running for about a minute.
Ah, after it's been running for about a minute. You need to check whatever is in your startup folder and whatever's running down in the lower right-hand corner. You may have some program that's running there.
For the video card.
For the video card that's saying this is the resolution I want. So you not only have to change the resolution in Windows itself, but also change the resolution in that little program that's running down by in the taskbar.
Or take that feature, try disabling it. It could be the video card or the monitor. There's sometimes, depending on the units, there can be an item in the startup to check the monitor and the video display. Uncheck those. You're not going to hurt anything by unchecking them because they're still there, but try that and see if that resolves the issue.
There's also a registry entry that says don't retain video settings.
Oh.
But why would there be a registry entry to do that?
Huh?
And how would it get set the other way? So, yeah, that's probably it. There's something for the video card driver that's setting itself back to the better resolution.
All right, thank you.
And unfortunately, you're going to have to, well, find that somewhere.
Yeah.
Here's an option. In your MS config, in the boot INI, you can add a base video option, and then it will always run at 640 by 480 at 16 colors, if that's how low you want to go.
That hurts.
Well, he just said that's what he wants to do.
Yeah.
16 colors?
Isn't that base video 640 by 480 by 16 colors?
Yeah.
Actually, base video may be higher now. That's what it was when I remember.
No, like, it still is. It's 16 colors. It hurts. That's as bad as running it in the old Windows 98 hot dog mode.
Yeah.
That was ready to throw up on that one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting that's an interesting problem we see regularly, particularly with older systems. They don't work as well in the newer, higher resolutions that operating systems want to run in. So I'm always getting calls from people, I've got an old this or that, and I just upgraded to Vista, or I just upgraded to Windows 7, and now it runs really badly. Well, there's two things there. One is the new operating system is designed for a new from new hardware, and you have old hardware, and B, probably your drivers are not right. Now, that's not his case because he's already running XP, but clearly there's something in his system that's saying, oh, you want, I know better than you do, and you want more than you want.
But that brings up a good point, though. He might want to also check the video drivers.
Yep.
I mean, you know, if he's on Service Pack 3, but that's just the OS. He might want to just go in to find out what video card he's got in that unit and check and see if there's any updates on that. Because that's one thing. ATI and NVIDIA and all those right now, they're constantly updating their drivers. They are both two companies that are always, you know, if they got something better, this or that, they're always updating. So it wouldn't hurt just to quick check that out. One feature that I kind of miss, HP did it for a while, it really never caught on, was you could go to HP's website and say I own, this was back when I had my LaserJet 2. And I could go to the LaserJet, website, check for the drivers. One of the things that you could do there was to check this little box and put in your email address. And what it would do is anytime a new driver come up for that LaserJet, it would send you an email and say, oh, there's a newer driver. Would you like to, go and check it out? And it got a link, and it would take you right to it. So that and a couple other sites, I miss that because that was handy.
One of the interesting things by one of the larger box mail order places you can buy a computer from is that they used to have a page you could go to. That would tell you what drivers, you put in your information, and they will give you a page that says what driver updates are available to you. And unfortunately, most of the lower end places don't do that, and certainly the locals don't have the manpower to do that.
Well, Linux, though, that's where you've got an advantage. So
it
it will automatically go out and check for stuff, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I have an update pending right now on my netbook that I'm not going to do because I'll have to reboot when it's done. Very few times you ever have to reboot, but this one it's actually upgrading the operating system itself.
But that's
so
constantly behind the scenes, though, just checking for you and keeping you up to date.
I have it set that it looks once a day. And so, and it's not just for the operating system. It's for every program in the system.
And drivers and everything else.
Everything. So, yeah, that's real nice about Linux. I don't ever have to worry about getting the latest of anything or the newest because it always comes to me.
That is one thing. I know there was a couple companies that tried doing that you could sign up for in there, but
The minute you made a change to your system yourself, now that list is wrong because it doesn't update because it's from the manufacturer.
Well, the biggest one that I found that mucks up machines, surprise, surprise, is, when you do the Windows updates, quite often down the bottom, you have to go down and check it. They'll have recommended hardware updates.
Oh, yeah.
Those, I have found, mess up a machine faster than you can shake a stick at.
Yep.
And it's like, whoa, I got to take it back to the previous date and time or another time because I don't know where the heck they're getting those drivers. But, man, they can mess up a machine like nobody's business.
What I've discovered, at least on one of the Vista machines that I'm running at work, is it constantly reports back to Microsoft the wrong video card. And so I'm constantly getting update requests, and I have to be very careful to remember to say no. Mm-hmm. On this one machine, it wants to upgrade the video driver to something that really, really isn't going to work. It's not just the wrong version. It's an entirely wrong card. and basically the response I get from Microsoft is, yeah, that happens sometimes. Okay, no. Thanks then. Appreciate that. Absolutely.
Yep.
Well, how many millions, probably hundreds of millions of PCs, 0.00001% of them have problems? And
right, and that's
a huge,
still a huge
number.
Yeah, exactly. You know, statistically, it's non-existent.
Yeah.
But in absolute numbers, it's huge.
Insignificant statistically.
Right. So, yeah, it's an interesting problem that they have, and I understand that it's not, they're not, mm-hmm. They have to go with it statistically. You can't set a bunch of programmers on a problem that six people may have. But when it becomes 600,000 people, maybe they should devote some resources.
It's one of my favorite known bug lists in Apple. Was it Apple II or Macintosh? One of the early Macs. There's a known bug that if you print a purple ampersand and a black background on an ImageWriter LQ, the computer will crash.
Huh?
We're not going to fix this bug.
Yeah, okay, I get that. Mm-hmm. I get that. But, when you are the largest computer company on Earth, mm-hmm. People don't cut you any slack.
Yeah. Well, did you hear about the black screen of death this week? Turned out to be, oops.
Yeah, basically.
The guy that reported the black screen of death after a Windows update turned out to have malware on his computer. And the Windows update didn't like the malware, and so his computer wouldn't work again.
No, there really is a black screen of death. One of our laptops, if you put it into hibernation, right, it won't come out. It comes out. I mean, it's running in the background, but you get no screen. You get absolutely no screen. And you can't make it have a screen.
Oh, really?
You have to shut it down and then, hold the power button in for 7 or 10 seconds or whatever the number is, mm-hmm. and then it'll shut down, and then it'll come up just fine. But it is consistent every single time we put it in hibernation. And, of course, it's a laptop. I understand that with a desktop. Desktops, you should never try to sleep or hibernate them, ever, because they don't do that.
Mm-mm.
But laptops are supposed to. And we have 75 of these laptops. They're all identical. Every other one, it works fine. This one, every single time consistently, you put it in, you close it and it into hibernation, and it, when it comes back, it's got the black screen of death. Every single time. And I don't know what's possibly different.
Is it spinning down the hard drives also? Because I know Windows hates.
And it's hibernating, so it shuts everything down.
Yeah.
And like I said, on the other 74, on the 22 we tested on, it's fine.
What about the brand of hard drives? Some of them like...
Yeah, even though it's an identical computer, completely different components inside.
Yeah, it could be, but the theory is it's not. And we've opened up a bunch of them over the year and last year, and they are identical. All the ones we've opened are identical. So, in fact, we insisted all the pieces and parts be identical because we want to be able to switch them back and forth.
Yep.
All right, our next caller is Jerry. Where are you calling from, Jerry?
Greece.
How are things in Greece?
Oh, cloudy.
Slippery?
Sure.
Not slippery yet.
Slippery,
maybe tomorrow.
Thank you. What's your question, Jerry?
I have a Word document. Every Word document that opens up, we get the paragraph sign. And I've gone through all the different toolbars and everything, and I can't get rid of the goofy.
That's
after
the
every
show.
Line, you get the paragraph sign.
Well, you get it after every paragraph, not after every line.
Now it's after every line.
Then
something must have happened.
You're hitting return to make a new paragraph. That symbol tells you you've made a new paragraph, and it's a feature in Word. And in one of the Word menus, there is a button to disable those invisibles or show symbols. Most of the time, the button looks like that paragraph symbol to turn off those symbols. What version of Word is it?
I went into where they have paragraph format with paragraph, and I open up, and a big window opens.
Yeah, it's not in there.
And you see the little dot between words and all of that stuff?
Yeah, it shows you the invisible symbols, and you've turned that feature on.
Yeah.
What version of Word are you using?
2000.
Under the Tools menu, I don't remember if this is 2000. It's either under the Tools menu, under Options in the View tab, or under Formatting. There's a checkbox button next to Space and Paragraph Marks.
Where is it? Space.
I don't remember which version of Word I'm thinking of in my head.
You know, all of a sudden it just appeared, and my wife has a document, and every line has this.
Right, and that's what's
you've turned this feature on.
Yeah, I'm
trying to find out, turn it off.
Right, and that's how you do it. In Word, go to the Tools menu and choose Options. On the View tab, there's a section called Formatting Marks. You'll either see the All box or the Paragraph Marks box will be checked.
There's also often, depending on which toolbar you have turned on, there's a Show Hide button with that paragraph symbol on the standard toolbar. So if you enable your standard toolbar, there'll be a button that has that paragraph mark, which looks like a reverse P, that shows and hides those paragraph symbols.
Right. And the reason you have them at the end of every line is because you're hitting the Enter key at the end of every line instead of letting the words
wrap. So you're making new paragraphs instead of making letting it wrap for multiple lines.
Right.
Okay, I'll play around with it.
Yeah, play around with it. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 40 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to Sound Bites.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, the answer to your computer questions on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
The Jazz 90.1 member card is more than just a card. It's our way of thanking you for supporting Jazz 90.1. Because in return, you can save money all year long by showing your Jazz 90.1 member card for discounts at local Jazz 90.1 member card businesses, including 45 East Fine Jewelers, Adams Basin Inn, Antonetta's Italian Restaurant, The Bop Shop, Bert Shapiro Photography, Hedonist Artisan Chocolates, Leaf and Bean Coffee Company, Lorraine's Food Factory, Mary Boyce of Mario's Hair Studio, Mind and Body Connection, New Health Cafe, Small World Bakery, Sound Source, Tuxedo Corner, Irondequoit and Gates locations, Enright PC Management, and Holland Music Studios. Carry your Jazz 90.1 member card and show it when you shop. For a complete and up-to-date list of member card businesses, visit our website at www.jazz901.org. To get your member card, call 966-5299. That's 966-JAZZ, and become a member of Jazz 90.1.
Heidi, ho, ho, ho. This is Charles Benoit, host of the Smart Set, wishing you the swinginest holiday season.
Every Sunday evening, join me, Derek Lucas, for The Spectrum. We find the mysterious side of jazz. Music to move your mind, body, soul, spirit, as well as help you do your homework. Every Sunday evening, 10 o'clock, here on Jazz 90.1.
Hey, this is Rip Savage. Join me tonight for Fusion, 10 p.m., right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 42 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites.
And we found an answer for previous caller. I just looked up his name and forgot it. Sorry.
Jerry.
The symbol button is next to the view percentage button, which usually says 100%, so where you change the percent view. The keyboard equivalent is Control Shift 8 or Control Asterisk, which will turn your paragraph marks on and off. Some versions of Word call them non-printing characters. Some versions of Word call it formatting marks. And it's in the Tools menu, the Options command, the View tab. Or you can hit Control-Shift-8 again to turn them off. And I've posted a link to that.
Nice. All right, our next caller is Larry. Where are you calling from, Larry?
Spencerport.
And what can we do to make you happy today?
I've just gotten a new computer with a 64-bit Windows 7. And previously I had XP. And I was using an Ubuntu disk and booting from the disk and using it. And I was wondering, is there an Ubuntu 64-bit disk that I can get?
Yes, you can download it from Ubuntu.com. Ubuntu comes in both 32 and 64-bit versions.
Well, I did that with version 6.10.
Yes.
Create a disk with that, and when I tried to load it, on a 64-bit machine, it would start up okay, and then it would get about partway through the loading, and then would come up and with some error.
Well, one of the problems with any Ubuntu version that starts with a 6,
yes,
it's from 2006.
Hey, isn't Ubuntu version 9?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're at 9.10. The first number is the year, the second number is the month. And they update twice a year, so you'll find .4s and .10s generally. So 9.10 is the latest one. So if you go to Ubuntu.org and say you want to download it, tell it you want the 64-bit version and blah, 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 and you're on your way. You really want the newest version. You don't want to use anything that's 3 years old.
Yeah, I looked under 9.1, and I didn't see a 64-bit, but I might have missed it.
There's
it's definitely there because I just downloaded it and installed it on a machine the other day. So
yeah, there's an other button. When I go there, it's assuming I want Ubuntu Desktop 9.10 32-bit. Below that, there's an alternative download options where you can pick 64-bit.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much.
And we found out something annoying with the Windows 7 installer disks.
Wait, what? Something annoying with Windows 7?
When you buy the Windows 7 retail box, you get 32-bit and 64-bit in the same box.
Mm-hmm.
When you buy the OEM, you have to buy a 32-bit and 64-bit separately, two separate packages,
yes,
different costs for each.
Of course. And they want to charge you more
at Microsoft.
64-bits has twice as many bits. It must be twice as expensive.
And it does. A 64-bit costs more than the 32-bit. And you got to buy it separately.
And the other thing, between the upgrade CD and the full version CD, they're one and the same.
Yep.
A separate disc.
Yeah, that makes sense.
DVD.
And that makes sense for them to make one DVD release, and your product registration number is keyed to be either a full or an upgrade.
That is one thing, though, I had a client run into. Said, got this Windows 7 update, and I was going to upgrade the machine because he had Vista on and wanted to get rid of Vista, and I was having all kinds of trouble. Yeah, you should just put it in and it should run. It's not running. What'd they do? Turns out he has two drives in there. Both of them are CD.
And you got
a burner. It's a DVD.
How old is this computer? They've been combo drives have been common for 10 years now, right? CD and DVD.
We don't even want to go to this one. You know, it's another one of those.
Yeah.
You know, they don't want to listen to me. I understand times are tight. But when you're trying to make silk out of a sow's ear, it ain't happening, folks. Yes. It is what it is.
The other problem with upgrading is you have to upgrade to the same version. We had a customer that had Windows Vista Ultimate, and he bought the Windows Home upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
It won't work.
Right.
You have to buy Windows 7 Ultimate to do an upgrade. Otherwise, you have to buy Windows Home full.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You can't upgrade to a lower version.
And the other thing is, don't bother, unless you're an extreme, you know, high-end user that uses like 35 different languages, don't bother getting Ultima.
Right.
The Windows 7 Ultima is not for the very few.
It comes with BitLocker and 35 languages.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Well, you can get TrueCrypt for free.
Right.
And you probably don't need those languages anyway.
Exactly. Right. So you're paying an extra, I think it's anywhere from $20 to $30 more.
Unless you actually want your machine to talk to you in Catalan, you don't really need that thing.
Mm-hmm. What's really annoying.
I'm not a big fan of Home, because Home leaves out some features that everybody really wants.
Well, and the biggest one is Backup and Restore.
Pro
Home does not include Backup and Restore. Pro does. The other thing is you can't join domains with Home.
Right.
Most people don't need to join a domain. And you can't run Windows XP mode with Home, so your old software may not work to force you to buy new software. That's a bigger price difference. It's $120 versus $200 for the Home versus Professional upgrade.
Yeah, but it, like you say, some of the features, it's well worth having.
Right.
You know, especially if you're talking other software.
Right.
That, you know, if you don't pay the difference to go from Home to Pro, that you might, you know, not work because of it being Home, but yeah, if you spent a couple of bucks more for Pro, now the other software that you, if you don't, you'd have to spend, say, $200-$300.
One of the nice, I can't believe I'm going to say this, one of the nice things about Windows 7 Disk is...
You have to. You got to wipe this guy.
It is. Every Windows 7 Disk is every version of Windows 7. And as I said, your serial number controls which version you actually pay for. So if you buy the Home Premium and then decide you need Pro, you can just pay the difference with your existing disk and upgrade to the next version up.
Yeah, they'll give you a new
version. At least that's nice. You don't have to go out and buy the whole new version.
You can just download Ubuntu or PC Linux Mint or whatever, Linux Mint or PC Linux OS.
I keep telling myself I want to get around to putting Windows 7 on my Mac, and I just haven't got around to it yet.
Yeah.
I mean, we got it on one of our test benches. I love it. Matter of fact, I've already got my upgrade. Like you say, I got the upgrade from a laptop, and it came with both the 32 and 64-bit CDs.
Even though
DVDs. Myself.
Yeah, even though it's two disks, it's still only licensed for one computer. Yeah,
right.
They make a big point of that in a licensing
agreement.
But
the thing of it is, though, is if I want to eventually go from 32-bit to 64-bit, because here's the other thing, folks. A lot of folks say, well, should I go 32 or should I go 64-bit? It depends. Windows 7 64-bit is like they're all ready for the prom, but the invite for other programs to run under it isn't a very long list.
Yeah, there hasn't been an incentive for Windows developers to write 64-bit software.
And I'm really hoping, though, that Windows 7, because they are, you know, including it with so many, will get more programmers to get off their dead butts.
The biggest issue for Windows 64-bit is if you have 4 gigabytes of RAM or more, which a lot of computers are now coming
You know, I mean, it's just been lazy programming. You know, game boxes run faster than PCs right now. They're all doing 128-bit.
Right.
We're still trying to get out of 32-bit.
We were just looking at that NVIDIA graphics card someone was talking about.
Yeah.
It's got 48 cores on the graphics card.
Isn't that amazing?
The desktop chips, the most of them only have 4 cores.
Mm-hmm.
And the big story is that Intel's getting ready to release a 6-core CPU.
Yeah,
48 cores on your graphic card.
That's one of the reasons that I love Ubuntu. Everything runs under 64-bit quite perfectly, thank you very much. I just installed 64-bit on my desktop. I've got 8 gig of RAM. I'm running Windows 7, rather, as a virtual system inside Ubuntu, and it runs great. And everything works perfectly, and I'm just really, really happy.
Yeah, no, I think for most folks, that's...
All under 64-bit, all just, again, all updates automatically, all the programs, all the drivers, all the operating system, everything.
Well, that's where a lot of folks, you know, if they're going to get a new machine, and like we've said before, you know, they've got this other machine, say it's even still a Pentium 4, and it's an original Pentium, Pentium 4. It's a good excuse just to have it sit next to your new Windows 7 machine and play with Ubuntu. You know, it's free. It's not going to cost you anything. If anything gets messed up, oh, well, you get to start all over again.
Right.
You know, and you just learn through it. And
I must tell you, I now fully and completely understand what I've been saying for so long.
Which is?
Which is, it's just like buying a new car. You still know how to drive. You
just don't know
where the radio is.
Do you know where your radio is now?
I'm learning where my radio is. Of course, my radio has an amazing series of things. I can do CDs and I can do MP3 CDs, so I can just copy stuff over. It'll take my iPod. It'll take an aux thing. My daughter sits there and plays with the radio all the way to school this morning, and it was very funny. But it's true, you know. I still know how to drive, but now I don't do certain things unless I can take my eyes off the road and look down to see where they are, so I know what it is I'm doing.
But that car is totally out of the system.
Does it have the heads-up display yet? I'm waiting for the heads-up display to get down into the lower-end cars.
Yeah, no, it's not yet.
Well, like I say, this car is though totally from the 60s, and what I mean by that, folks, his car came with a shag rug.
It did. It comes with the, it's called the Shag Dash Topper. And it's this little circular, about 9-inch circular section of shag rug. I actually offered to pay them more to not install that. So it's in my trunk, but it's not
installed.
They didn't charge me more, but they did not install that.
You know what? You should put it on top of the car.
Yeah. Some
like
place for my cat to sleep.
Like a dad.
I put it on the hood.
There you go. With a shag rug.
I love this idea.
Well, here you go. If you lose it, you can buy another one. They're only $25.
Yep.
MyNissanParts.com.
And I don't need to buy another one because mine's going to sit in the trunk for the next 11 years.
They're on sale for $21.60.
Excellent. That's something, listen, for all those of you listening and have been wondering what to get me for Christmas, I don't need the Dash Shag Topper. I've already got one. Thanks.
A rake to go with it.
A little shag rake, yeah.
So you can fluff it up every so often.
I was thinking one of those big Afro combs. That would work for me.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
That would work.
But I have not installed it. Instead, what I'm going to do, my wife did this in her car, and it works great. That slightly sticky, grippy stuff that you use to open jars, you know, that you can use to open jars. You can buy that in rolls, and it comes in multiple colors. So I'm going to get a color that matches my dashboard, cut a circle out for that spot, cut another little strip out for the place where... in front of the passenger, there's a spot. And then my wife does that in her car, and she's got one of those organic tops, too, that never has a flat surface. But she throws her cell phone onto that thing, and it never moves no matter what she does. So that's kind of a good deal right there. All right, that music tells me we are done for another week. I want to thank everyone who called in. Apologize to everybody to whom we did not get. So please call earlier and more often next week. Please vote in the poll. Please join us in the forums. Please don't send me a Dash Shag Topper. And we will be back here next week, same bat time, same bat channel, on the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. And we are delighted and grateful to be right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We'll see you next week. Have fun.
Soundbites, celebrating 20 years.